Why are you the way that you are? Part one. Occasionally, I say or do things that bring out a row. It's true. And as a result, I have occasionally been asked, in some form or another, why are you the way that you are? Well, in this post and others to come in the future, I intend to explain myself. First, meek doesn't mean weak. If you read the Bible, and I hope that you do, you'll see that Jesus is depicted as meek and lowly of heart, meaning he's humble and submissive to what God has called him to do. But that humility and submissiveness is to what God has called him to do, which often flies in the face of man. The world today is largely ignorant of God's commands, and the ones that it does know, it often hates. Homosexuals go to hell. Men and women are different. A boy can't become a girl. Wives, submit to your husbands. There's a large chance my readership of this post just decreased by about 50%, and that's okay. If you're still here, that means that you might be listening, and so let's press forward. Jesus, in his teaching, submitted to what God told him to do and not man, and as a result, put himself in direct conflict with the world around him. He rebuked the Pharisees to their faces on multiple occasions, even calling them whitewashed tombs. In other words, calling them dead, and a place to house the decaying, which is not a compliment. There was even the moment in Jesus' ministry where he confronted a woman who bounced from divorce to divorce over and over again and was currently shacked up and unwed, John 4. Could you imagine having that type of confrontation today with someone you just met? It'd be difficult in our modern setting because that is actually the situation in the majority of American homes today, most believing that it's perfectly fine. They don't know what God's standard is to begin with. And isn't that an interesting scenario? It's almost as though someone should tell them. And to do so would take a tremendous amount of humility and meekness. Meekness oriented towards God, not man. God's standard isn't our standard. We have fallen so far away from the mark of God's standard for the world that when the average Westerner hears what would have been understood as tame Bible teachings 50 years ago, they react with vitriol and anger. But this shouldn't be surprising to us. In fact, the Bible tells us plainly that we should expect to be hated by some for what Christ teaches. Actually, it says you'll be hated by, open quotes, everyone, close quotes. But I think Jesus is being hyperbolic. What is interesting, though, is that some Christians run interference for the unrepentant sinners. Now, I don't think they're doing this out of malice or ill intentions. I think they're genuinely trying to do what they think is best. And in their mind, they believe that the biggest threat to the spread of the gospel is preachers who confront sin directly and publicly. Full disclosure. I don't think I'm on a different team than those Christians. I just think that they're confused. I think they've been steeped in the fake love culture of the contemporary American Christian church. They believe that the only way to bring someone to faith in Christ is by loving them into the kingdom, with which I would agree, provided we can define that word love first. Love requires conflict. If you love me, you will keep my commandments. Love requires an action. It's not just a mushy feeling, no matter what Disney will tell you. Love does something. Now, even the kind of squishy contemporary American Christians that have been steeped in the fake love culture get that. I remember being in the middle of the COVID debacle, many prominent Christian leaders started pushing that the idea of loving your neighbor was wearing a mask and getting vaccinated 12 times. You see, everyone generally agrees that love requires an action, and everyone agrees that action should be based on a moral precedent. The question is, which moral precedent should it be based on? Well, I think the moral precedent established by the whole Bible, all of it, cover to cover, not just the scenes that have been rewritten by the chosen. To love someone, to really care about them, means that you don't want them to go to hell. And if you don't want them to go to hell, it means that you want to tell them how to avoid hell, even if it's going to put you at odds with them as a person. This is something that I flesh out more at length on a podcast episode. Christians believe that salvation comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of Christ, Romans 11. Meaning, Jesus wants us to tell others what he came to do. He came to save sinners, and sinners need to know that they are sinners in order to know that Jesus has come to save them. And, here's the kicker, sinners don't like being told that they are sinners. We can see that in Jesus' life and all the prophets before him and apostles after him, many a conflict was afforded by simply telling people that there is only one way to heaven, and his name is Jesus. But if we really love them, we must tell them. And sometimes it takes a bit of public flourish in order to drive the point home. Table flipping is an option. When Jesus cleansed the temple, he didn't have to do it the way he did it. This is the man who spoke to calm the wind and the waves of a raging storm with a simple peace, be still. This is the man who de-escalated a crowd that was getting ready to throw him off a cliff and calmly walked right through the middle of them to leave. But in the instance of the temple cleansing, Jesus became the storm. He escalated the situation. He made a whip and drove out the money changers who had converted his father's house from a house of prayer into a den of robbers by beating them and throwing furniture. But why did Jesus have such a large, clear, loud, and public reaction? Because in part, this particular sin was so obvious, loud, and public, Jesus confronted it directly and on public display, with a high degree of ferocity in order to teach a lesson to all of those present. It was instructive. His violent and aggressive response was to teach both those he was driving out and the witnesses present something important, that God is not to be trifled with. So far, I haven't flipped any literal tables, although I have wondered if it would be appropriate in a few instances. But I think I have intentionally tossed a few proverbial tables in a few conversations, both public and private, and I have no intention of stopping. If Christians are going to be a faithful witness to the world, it means that we need to love the world enough to care that they hear what is true. And it also means that we need to be willing to demonstrate it loudly and publicly. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing the word of Christ. So shout it. But what about those passages in the New Testament that specifically tell us not to be quarrelsome? Well, I'm glad you asked. I'll be dealing with those passages directly in another post coming soon. Here's a teaser. It's all about the context.